New Ageism, and largely a product of Jewish contrivance, though having some oppositional qualities to Jewry, such as in the case of Blavatsky, in large part has throughout its short history prescribed an obsessive focus on moralism of a quasi-Christian Hindu pacifistic do-no-harm variety. The real face concealed beneath this mask, however, is that of an inhibited and neurotic passive aggression which has the words peace and love forever on its lips while it breathes its halitosis breath in the face of its enemies and bites as it kisses, love-bombing all who reject its fallacious presuppositions. These presuppositions are simply a convoluted extension of Christianism, the egalitarian submissiveness before the Earth Mother other than a spiritually virile and manly comportment toward the natural world, as in the case of National Socialism, which upheld the aristocratic ideal of differentiated order, hierarchy, inequality, discipline and will to power. The New Age promised throughout its history and promises to this day nothing that would in any way conduce to a spiritually virile mode of life or upliftment of the lower being of fallen man to the level of Superman. It promises only a painted mask overlaid upon a cadaverous face draped in the rainbow flag of the failed integration of the soul. Contrast this spiritually soporific condition of soul syphilis with the esoteric Hitlerism of Miguel Serrano, which, far from being New Age, is indeed primordial, the Weltanschauung of the eternal age of timeless truth, which harkens back to the ancient Hyperborean solar Uranian tradition. The New Age is indeed in diametrical opposition to esoteric Hitlerism on the most fundamental points of its doctrine, escapist rather than pragmatically oriented, pacifistic rather than active in a virile sense, emotional rather than entailing a transcendent detachment from the chaos of worldly life, pathologically altruistic, venerating weakness and defectiveness rather than supporting power and strength harmoniously attuned to the absolute, a graceless and human-centeredness, or if not human then purely telluric, a nature religion of pantheism rather than the higher transcendent orientation of esoteric Hitlerism, a condemnation of higher forms of life which exhibit strength and power, creative ingenuity and challenging endeavor, substituting in its place a stagnation of positive action in the name of peace. Indeed, New Ageism is yet another constellation of spiritually suicidal creeds which are used as a means of tearing down legitimate power sources of opposition against the cabal, a channel through which to bleed off any pent-up aggression that may exist in those who might pose a threat to its hypocritical despotism. The distortion of New Ageism trickles down into the mass mind as so much poison from above and conditions the broad masses to follow broad and winding paths to the abyss laid out for them by Jewry as so many byways deviating from the straight and narrow path of truth. The consequences of venerable social cataclysm, as spoken of prognosticatively by Albert Pike in his letter to Giuseppe Mazzini concerning the Third World War and the Negredo phase of political alchemy, is facilitated in its manifestation to the chaotic ideas of New Ageism. These ideas serve to divide and conquer the population, driving their candy-coated and rainbow-colored wedges into the integral cultural organism of the Aryan race, and serve to tear it apart, fracturing it along countless ideological lines like tributaries deviating from a major river and making encroachments upon the land, splitting it up and flooding its luxurious verdure with its corrosive waters. The trickle-down effect of pseudo-sophisticated New Ageism and marketed to the intelligentsia gradually poisons the brains of the broad masses who operate in an inebriated and intoxicated state as vectors of this planned chaos, cancerous cells in the host body of society. The cultural degeneracy orchestrated by Jewry in large part was designed to drag the consciousness of the masses down into the gutter of the subpersonal, the tellurism of the intermensch, sexual promiscuity, superseding the sexual inhibition of Christianity, drug and alcohol addiction and the pursuit of thrills through self-stimulation with poisons of the body, mind and soul, and the aesthetic thought forms or egregores which lead toward these practices, a sensationalistic and shocking gestalt of audiovisual multisensorial effect designed with one purpose, that being, to destroy the culture organism of the Aryan race and indeed all other non-Jewish cultures which Jewry seeks to invade, sabotage and destroy after assimilating all the wealth for itself and its kind. The inversion of traditional values and the semitized distortion of traditional values, that of Christianity, which nonetheless prescribed some elements of tradition within itself, was the protocol invoked to disintegrate the society of the non-Jewish other, the corrosion of the cultural battery acid of what the National Socialists called Entartetokultur or degenerate culture. The inversion of reality within the matrix of Zion transformed love in a higher, spiritual sense into lust, peace in the cosmic sense of universal harmony into a piece of the pie of a commodified world, equality in the sense of equals treated as equals regardless of the contingent blows of fate they were subject to, inequity with the person dying with the most toys winning a Pyrrhic victory in a perpetual war of ruthless competition with each vying with all for supremacy, not the supremacy of truth or justice of the Aryan race but for the supremacy of their selfish false self, a purely worldly quest after the biggest piece of the pie they could beg, borrow or steal. Justice transformed under the influence of Entartetokultur into justas, the combines and monopolies of the parasite tribe and their Shaboskoi plutocrats and commissar elites. The process of immanentizing the eschaton, in the words of Robert Anton Wilson the Jewish occultist, was undergone through the machinery not only of the degenerating Entartetokultur but to its ideological or intellectual seeds which the tribe had implanted into the consciousness of the more rotten elements of their hopes through the allure and beguilement of mystery, and a catering to the lust and greed of their rivals. This gradualistic process of societal breakdown the Jews initiated upon entry into any of their host populations operating at a subterranean level of praxis, the circulation of pornography and trafficking in prostitution in which their own females were sold as vessels of lust and corruption of the indigenous population, drugs and alcohol were always staples in their trade in vice and, occupying the margins and fringes of the indigenous society, they made inroads as a creeping pestilence into the center of the host, not only in terms of geographical inroads targeting the malcontents and marginalized populations but the periphery of the mind of the nation, from its more detached or corrupt priestly caste and criminal elements at lower levels to the average everyday middle class member. The host becomes rotted out from the periphery to the center. Now, that which is considered marginal is the former center, and that which is the former center has become decentered through this process of the degeneration of ideology and subsequent and simultaneous creation of Entartetokultur. The creation of the Kultur, through the ledger domain of the black magician Hidden Hands of Zion, had its ideological influence and served as a vector of ideology just as the ideology they had established to whatever degree, had its cultural imprint upon the minds of the population. Introducing cultural vice such as salacious novels or peep shows and the inevitable accompanying poisons pervade therein, the liquor-soaked environment and haze of drug smoke worked reciprocally to condition the population to embrace the new normal or normative inversion, the transvaluation of the values of tradition and their supplementation with the terrorism of the nether regions, the diabolism of the dark side of Eden. As a consequence of Jewry's creation, or rather plagiarism, of culture, transforming it into Entartetokultur, the state of consciousness of the population had become degraded, taking it away from the higher states of consciousness and the spiritual planes toward the nether regions, enabling the dark forces to feed upon the energy they released through such vicious pursuits of hyperstimulation. The low vibrational frequency music played in the dens of iniquity, euphemistically called bars or pubs, was simply an additional ingredient in the stew of vice that lowered the consciousness and destabilized the integrity of the lost souls of those enclaves, enabling the entities to bind to their slaves and to feed upon their bioenergy. The influence of drugs and liquor lowered the natural defenses of the population and weakened their capacity to resist the influence of these entities. Indeed, it was not simply the exploitation of the indigenous population Jewry sought, nor even their destruction, though under such influences it would be inevitable, but the vampirization of their souls that was and is the ultimate endgame of Jewry and their reptilian overlords. To keep the masses weakened in every way possible was and is the goal as means of beating down their capacity to resist this process of vampirization of their souls. Substances which cause the dissipation of loosh in the atmosphere, stimulants which accelerate the metabolic rate and increase the discharge of energy, stimulants of a substantial nature such as drugs and alcohol, of an insubstantial virtual nature such as the illusion machines of TV, video games and cell phones, the obligation of wage slavery and the imposition of chronic lower and negative states of consciousness, fear, lust, pain, worry, concern, all designed to have a weakening influence upon the soul. Depressants of a psycho-spiritual nature such as the end-times blueprint of Judeo-Christianity, with its doom and gloom, the physiological results of hyperstimulation, nervous exhaustion and burnout, the depressant nature of alcohol, the liquid drug associated with popularity, making of one the life of the party, the vital energetic source amidst the party of reptilian transdimensionals who leech off his soul to empower themselves. Such a process of degeneration was from its beginning always the procedure of Jewry in their destruction of host nations, not for the abstract representation of bioenergy called money but for the bioenergy itself, and not for themselves alone, who are merely instruments on the earth of these entities, but for the entities and their deity the Demiurge. The chaos magic of the black magicians operates on the basis of what the Duke Count Richard Coudenhove von Kalergi called practical idealism, and which process was replicated in the official though only partly encoded in law and ideology policy of the Soviet regime, with its dialectical materialism or idealist materialism in the words of Stalin. The reification of the idea, the manifestation of egregores or thought forms from higher planes, is the basis of this black magic. The idea is created as a syncretism of previously existent ideas then, through ceremonial magic as well as more tangible cultural forms of magic, reified into the consciousness of the broad masses to condition the mass mind according to the blueprint of Jewry, shifting and perverting the harmoniously pre-existent consciousness of the culture organism of the indigenous culture and attempting to mold it into a golem of their own distortion, serviceable to their ends and those of their overlords. The end game, as aforesaid, is the harvesting of the soul energy of the non-Jewish population and their gradual replacement with Jewish hybrids ruling over a mongrelized mass of slaves at lower levels who serve as livestock on the animal farm of Zion. The idealism of Kabbalistic black magic is the illusion machine Jewry employs in their theater of the real, creating a warped perception of reality amongst the population through their exciting and sensationalistic gaslighting techniques. The pageantry of the theater of Jewry in its conventional form parallels that of their theater of the real, blending together the world of Maya and their harmful ideas or egregores which are put before the masses, entangling themselves in their formerly healthy consciousness and wreaking havoc, creating chaos within, which necessarily translates into chaos without. The spectacle of the theater of the real is the matrix of Zion. Its fabric or structure is forever shifting and transforming as scenes in a movie seamlessly blend, changing the perspectives and actions of the incarnate souls they call Goyim. The Jews' material instruments on the earth are bringing all into their Zion matrix spider's web, binding them in Yahweh's electromagnetic web of illusion more solidly than the Mishpuk who encase their rivals' feet in concrete boots. We are trapped in the all-pervasive mesh of Yahweh's net, and though some of us struggle to free ourselves, the mesh binds ever tighter, further restricting our movements. The only path available through these bonds is the dagger of the mind. Once the bonds of one captive slave are cut by themselves through the development of the higher intuition and sound reason, they can assist others in severing theirs. To remain complacent and apathetic is to acquiesce to the loss of one's soul and to give carte blanche to the dark forces to transform a former Elysium into a burnt-out wasteland whose life force they will have vampirized. Female power, female violence, the mother goddess religion has never disappeared. It has lurked in the shadows of this world for millennia, its origins shrouded in mystery, the mysteries of iniquity. In modern times this cult has spread itself globally through its nexuses like strands of a spider's web, undetectable to the many too many of profane humanity. The mother goddess can be likened to the figure of Shelob in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. She guards the gates to Mordor, to the higher planes above the physical that one must pass in order to transcend the reincarnation trap of her spider's web. She exists in the nether regions, does Shelob, the mother goddess, between the third and the fourth dimensions, in the astral planes with her fellow spiders and their consorts, the shades of her devotees on the earth plane who have forsaken their mortal coil, these and the dark, vampiric entities who steal the souls of men, feeding upon their vital energy both in physical life and post-mortem. Her cult involves an ecstatic devotion to these infernal forces and to herself, the mother goddess, the undifferentiated absolute of holy chaos, venerated by they on the mundane plane who seek to state their bloodlust and obsession with power. These beings, devotees of her vile black magic, of sacrifice and the consumption of the living in vampiric rites, have castrated themselves in ecstatic devotion to her image and allow themselves to be transformed into her slaves to attempt the impossible, to sate her insatiable lust for power and their own in the process. These ecstatic states of consciousness her devotees undergo are designed to attract the entities who dwell within these nether regions or the infernal regions of being, and to derive power from them in exchange for blood. The diabolical pact formed between these entities and the devotees of the Mother Goddess have been consistently maintained over millennia, possibly without interruption since the genesis of mankind. They are the real cause of world unrest, and the whole working of the apparatus of statecraft can be laid before them as the raison d'etre of the chaotic history of this world. These consorts of the Mother Goddess are as had it in relation to Nui in Kroelian terms. They are the Baals or Baal priests of the ancient Phoenicians, one of the enclaves of the merciless merchants of Yahweh Jehovah. Today they are the entire Judeo-Christian priest caste from Catholic to Protestant to Jewry, all priests of the order of Melchizedek who, in conjunction with Masonry, serve as the cabal of black magicians who enslave us all in the prison matrix of Zion. The chaos they create is a pageantry of appearances, simulacra, which blind the masses and obscure hidden handworking the levers and gears of the Leviathan machine of statecraft and all of its subordinate limbs, economy, judiciary, religious and academic mind control, and other appendages of this beast of Zion. Simulacra and simulations, veils of appearances, are the principal technology of power of the Mother Goddess cult, her consorts playing the executive role of hoodwinking through such theater of the real, their human, all too human, profane slave labor, whose potential rebelliousness is held in check by these Mayavic veils, rainbow flags, the kaleidoscopic imagery 63 of the virtual reality mind control machines of the cybernetic dreamscape of illusion, the icons of the Church Fathers of Mary Magdalene and Jesus her consort, the Ra and Isis of Pisces. All serve to perpetuate the rule of pharaonic power of the priest kings, who employed this beguiling and seductive array of sensualistic appearances to beguile and pacify the foolish masses. Through their black magic of emotionalization, of pairing the image of a virtual reality with certain states of emotion acted out by themselves and their minions in their theater of the real, the witless masses of sheep are conditioned to react emotionally every time they encounter these stimuli, to act according to their mental conditioning in the Pavlovian sense, or better, in the sense of sympathetic magic. The priests empower the simulacra of image, sound and appearance with certain meaning and cast the image before the purblind senses of the broad mass of their flock, before which they then replicate the appropriate behavior, understanding at a near level of their consciousness that the appropriate emotional reaction means the condition of their continued participation within their herd as one of the kosher branded cattle. To fail to make overt display of emotional reactivity is to signify my way of absence of the appropriate behavior, one's non-compliance with the consensus gentium, and to receive, as in the ancient Greek practice, the ostraco of social ostracism and beyond this perhaps, damnation, hellfire, or a similar fate. The Mother Goddess cult operates on the basis of collectivism: either one is in and this totally and completely, or one is out. There is no room for question or dissent, all must be equalized and homogenized within the hive mind, merging with the Mother Goddess in her cosmic womb, to be absorbed within, in the instinctive level of being, the subpersonal. Such a cult drags one down into the depths of being, to an infrahuman level of being, wherein all are, as Oswald Spengler spoke of with respect to women, plant-like in their existence, purely passive objects, as so many flowers in the garden of Gaia and the Mother Goddess, all else are weeds awaiting their destruction at the hands of the insects in the beehive of Masonic collectivist despotism. Chelob is the archetype of this cult of infrahumanity, with all higher principles of ones being dragged down to the level of the common human, all too human. All art and higher achievements and those intellectual capacities which enable them to manifest through human agency, are torn down by the pincers of the ants of the anthill as so many weeds into the mulch of leveling equality. This is communitarianism, the postmodern socio-political conjuncture that serves as a template for the organization of the human, all too human, by the Baal priests of the order of Melchizedek, devotees of the Mother Goddess. Communitarianism is, As Roger Devlin referred to liberalism in his work of the same name, the tyranny of ambiguity, in which no distinct or determinative source of power exists that can be implicated as the agent or agents of policy and decision-making, only a giant bureaucratic network of petty tyrants ruling over their minute and compartmentalized functions as so many folders and subfolders in a filing cabinet or computer database. All bureaucrats, just as in the case of the Politburo of the Soviet Union, are identified only by an ambiguous name and title, typically by their first or last name only with an initial beside, or even beyond this a simple title and numerical reference. That such slimy bureaucrats, and slimy by definition, escape any liability for their decisions by concealing themselves in the mass of communitarian ooze or buried within the files and fine print of the bureau enables them to shift blame amongst themselves and to escape any punishment individually, and especially any threats to their system whose soft power lacks any face or body to identify and obstruct in its blind and short-sighted exercise of power. The communitarian beehive of society is a concretion of the mother goddess, her bureaucratic representatives being the political counterparts to the Baal priests of ancient Phoenicia and the Near East. Beyond and above these are the black magician Baal priests who exercise the real power above the executive level. It is they who, in the name of the GAOT, you seek to manifest into being their Temple of Solomon, whose structure strikingly resembles a bureau or public administration building compartmentalized with superordinate and subordinate functionaries who are interrelated as bees in a hive to ensure the perpetuation of the system and its expansion of power, assimilating all within itself and annihilating those unassimilable within its womb-like prison. The power of the Mother Goddess is extrapolated into being through her consorts, those at the highest levels of whom are undoubtedly females themselves, members of female masonry who are the priestesses of the Mother Goddess, Cybele, Isis, Mary Magdalene, Gaia Sophia. These material females are governed by the instinctive mind and serve the whole of the Mother Goddess, fractal microcosms of her macrocosmal non-being, her cosmic web of astral light. Like so many queen bees governing the hive, they carry out, perhaps without any conscious thought, operating at an instinctiver level of consciousness, their tasks within their own particular sphere of mundane reality and, again instinctively, as if in answer to some form of telepathic transmission of communication from the Mother Goddess and her mundane representative, Gaia Sophia, to simply act in a manner coherent with the will of Isis, for the perpetuation of her static non-being and mundane finitude on Gaia as Gaia. The political concretization of the hive mind in communitarianism is a female expression of power, a ubiquitous state of static inertia lacking the dynamism of the divine masculine. The maintenance of female power operates as Shelob in her tenebrous webbing, her network of obstruction to the development of higher and more complex forms of culture, the flower of the dynamism of masculine power. Female power in its inertia thus constitutes an obstruction to that of the masculine spirit, to the solar Uranian forces of the divine masculine. In its proper place it stabilizes the masculine forces, but, when the latter slackens its tension of development or the former has enveloped and assimilated the latter through a pre-existent imbalance of the energies, inertia is the result and entropy, a gradual catagogic process of breaking down occurs, of disintegration as the higher is assimilated into the lower through the process of leveling equality. The end result is the multicultural wasteland of the cloaca genitum, the morbid stagnation of the higher which is sacrificed at the expense of the lower, leading to the reign of quantity in the words of René Guénon in his book of the same name. The telluric rites of Dionysian in ecstasy, of the chaotic emotionalism of the Mother Goddess, are the residue of this disintegration process, ultimately terminating in the gory residue of the mysteries of iniquity, bloody sacrifice, vampirism and cannibalism. From this point the dark forces gain mastery of the earth, absorbing the energies of their savage and debased slaves into themselves, accelerating the entropy of the higher life forms of the earth who have become detached from higher planes of being. Within the spider's web of Shelob the hapless flies anesthetized by her venom lie contentedly in her webbing awaiting the vampirization of their life force. The female forces which seek the vampirization of the life force of others, descend upon the net of the matrix of the dark forces and feed upon the expendable flies who serve them as their sole food. In more mundane terms this comes in the form of wage slavery, the debased and sub-intellectualized masses being reduced through the process of leveling equality to the state of witless drones of sub-personality, mere robots, subhuman batteries which serve the system and exist only in its service. This is the policy of white slavery and specifically of white male slavery, the concealed castration of white men from an in utero state and throughout their developmental period, developing in the image or simulacrum of a worker bee, a proletarian slave of the hive mind of Gaia Sophia. To maintain their collectivist despotism, the matriarchy and their castrated Baal priests, the brethren of the lodge, make use of the virtual reality apparatus of the theater of the real, through which all acts and figures observable to the public are assimilated into the mass mind consciousness as a distinct type with a distinct meaning. This is designed to condition the conscious mind to adopt certain behaviors and to serve as a crook leading the flock of sheep back into the pen should they stray, to be sheared and ultimately slaughtered. The notion of pre-crime applies here especially to those few white men still worthy of the name who have not allowed themselves to be castrated by the matriarchy of the mother goddess through psychosocial enervation and mutilation of their being by their female and effeminized teachers and social superiors in the hierarchy of the Masonic beehive. The Judeo-Christian churches took the mother goddess cult in a slightly different direction, but nonetheless serves her in her aspect of Mary Magdalene and her Christ child, the initiated figure of a Christ or anointed one, deriving from the Egyptian mysteries of the crestos or crocodile fat with which the initiates into the mysteries were anointed. The archetypes of Christ and Lucifer were Piscean Age contemporary variants of that of Horus and Mithras, of Attis and Dionysus, syncretic amalgams of the archetypes of the Mother Goddess and her consort in the Near East and Mediterranean region. For the masses, this figure functioned as an exoteric figure with a historical presence, whereas for those selected to elevate themselves up the ladder of the Masonic Christian hierarchy, he was a symbolical archetype of initiated gnosis, he who had attained enlightenment through the prescribed rites, attaining varying degrees of light. Through such process, the initiate became the servitor of the dark forces, his soul becoming captive as he merged with the hive mind of the mother goddess, gradually losing the autonomy of his soul. It was the pageantry in imaginary dreamscape and priestcraft which served as a shepherd's crook to hook him into the fold and to bind him there in hypnotic fascination with the spectacle of female power, a cover and seductive form of fatal attraction, like a black widow spider enticing her victims into her web with her alluring red pattern on her otherwise shining black body. The female violence of the mother goddess cult operates on the basis of illusion, the apparent good being served up as a simulacrum, as mask or spice which conceals a real harm beneath the false appearance of the working class hero, concealing his slavery and abject serfdom before the Baal priests and priestesses of Isis. Lady Liberty serving as a simulacrum for the collectivist despotism of matriarchy. The power of matriarchy is thus implicit and unidentifiable, operating clandestinely and through proxies in a ubiquitous network behind which the mother goddess lies. The political theater of democratic politics and its faux opposition amount to nothing but illusion, a mechanism of distraction and means of controlling the witless pawns of Zion. The proxies behind which matriarchy hides serve to shift attention from the real power which exists covertly behind the scenes. This power has usurped, through its subterranean process of assimilation of the power of others as a black widow spider, near total power to the degree it can be spoken of as absolute. And yet the black widows, the shelob spiders who hide behind simulacral masks of overt power, of particular appearances of power, are not to be seen, identified or held accountable. They, in their absolute or near absolute power of the absolute, the mother goddess, have simultaneously absolute unaccountability, zero liability for their violence. Hence their violation of the other, of the divine masculine and the differentiated man of the Aryan is of a passive-aggressive, female nature, the natural modality of female violence being passive aggression. Shelob strikes in the darkness and her venom does not have immediate effect but operates slowly, her bite typically undetectable to the mundane who misunderstands the workings of her subtle and instinctive web-spinning of political machinations. To the masses of flies in her web of bureaucratic despotism, she, the female face of the mother goddess, is innocent darling, innocent, and her cosmetic mask which conceals her power and her instinctive workings is a simulacrum readily torn aside by the penetrating wisdom of the man of race, The differentiated man who is not subject to the influence of the theater of the real and who understands through reason and intellect that it is all just a simulacrum of power itself and it is the simulacral nature of matriarchy in which this power lies. To tear aside the mask from the face of Shelob is to lay bare her true face, that of the chthonic, sub-personality of the hive mind. The functioning of female power comes in the form of the prohibition of the schoolmarm, a dogmatic, rule-bound pedantry without liberty to deviate from the rules. That is, unless such deviance entails an activation of the libidinal, an activation of the eros and thanatos dimension of the instinctive mind with its thonic excitation and the Dionysian ecstasy. All else is a prohibition and a perpetual spying and control, freakish micromanagement of everything and everyone, wrapping up all difference in the wedding of Shelob. Jewish power, in spite of its macho facade, is female and hence works in tandem with the power of matriarchy. Whether Jewry or the Masonic elite of the female Illuminati are ultimately in power is a question that requires further investigation, so that the crosshairs of one's mind are placed on the proper target and the subjugation of the collectivist despotism can be achieved as a victory for the higher culture of the world and for Aryan mankind. Female consciousness is inherent in Jewry, as Otto Weininger, the Jewish philosopher and writer of the book Sex and Character, contended and spoke of as an authority on the subject. Our age, which is not only the most Jewish, but also the most effeminate of all ages. Nietzsche also spoke of the Dionysian tendency and female mode of consciousness of Jewry, although he praised them as well, having been assimilated into their hive mind if only to a degree through a female influence, that of Lou Andreas Salome, who had captured him with her hypnotic or mesmeric influence, that so characteristic of a woman, amplified through her being Jewish. The Jewish type is that which Nietzsche also spoke of as embodying the Semitic tendency which the Arabs had overcome and which Jewry had failed to overcome, that characterized by Julius Evola in three aspects of the Jewish problem as Dionysian, a lunar, mutable quality given toward irrational outbursts and emotional pathos. Such emotional pathos was translated by Jewry into their religion of Judaism, which is purely devotional and submissive toward an irrational deity who throws temper tantrums without apparent cause, a veritable tempest in a teapot form of spirituality. Whether Jewry created this religion based upon their consciousness to a degree and/or they were created by this entity is a question. Regardless, the religion of Judaism and the anti-race race of Jewry are intertwined and amplify one another in a dialectic of expansionism, a will to power, to control and enslave, and this based upon a chaotic feminine consciousness. Indeed, the consciousness of females is mutable, like the moon, and can properly be spoken of as lunar, just as can that of the Jew, as any can observe by way of inferring the inner from the outer, the mind or consciousness inferable from the behavior and action. Though Weininger stated opposites attract, sameness attracts also, as Baltasar Gracián, the Spanish Jesuit, said, like attracts like, as surely as the lodestone attracts iron and birds of feather flock together, as a proverb has it. Hence Jewry and females gravitate toward one another on an instinctive basis, without any conscious awareness, and form a Mephistophelian pact with one another on the basis of sympathetic resonance. Of course, exceptions to the rule apply. However, the general principle of sympathy between females and Jews applies, which explains the relative ease through which Jewry may penetrate into Aryan society, and indeed in any society, as a pleomorphic parasite, ingratiating himself with the host by way of female sympathy. Of course, it can be argued that the Aryan man are to blame in permitting the females of power over them, to indulge the females in their whims, which latter are typically only a test of male strength, and which is the nature of females as, so to speak, vessels of nature in its selection of the strongest and wisest to perpetuate the species and elevate it in accordance with the natural teleology of the type. The religion of Jewry is tribal, collectivistic, and other than an oligarchical theocracy of rabbis, unidentifiable and hidden in its power, and hence functions in a subterranean manner in its political praxis, centered around intrigue and legerdemain, a strategy of female hypertrophy, growing in power in an imperceptible manner. Max Weber's book Ancient Judaism expounds upon the tribalistic nature of Judaism. He does not go far enough in failing to recognize that this tribalism is a projection of the consciousness of Jewry, that of the hive mind of the demiurge which works through them as an instrument, the octopus working through its tentacles in its mad grab for power, seeking in its instinctive creep to strangle the earth and vampirize the souls of its denizens in its beak. Yahweh Jehovah was apparently a female pagan Canaanite deity before being reformulated into its current form. Christianity being a shadow cast from the original formation of Judaism is itself of the female nature. This can be seen in the effeminate pathos, so archetypically Semitic, of the figure of Jesus, whose emotional pathos epitomizes the frenzy of the Dionysian modality of Jewish consciousness, aggressive in the sense of a macho man Randy Savage of wrestling infamy and yet motivated by a schizoidal and visionary or delusive imagining faculty that leads to an either extrovertive hitting out or striking at others, the non-tribal other, the goyim, or an inward-directed self-abasement. Flagellation or suicide, as Otto Weininger, Carlo Mitchell Steter and Arthur Koestler realized their fate. Indeed, fatalism is a natural orientation of the Semite or Near Easterner, and this presumably based upon their hybridity and or their alien origins, which leads to their having no future beyond this earth and their soul's reincarnation and gradual entropy thereon. Hence their fatalistic resignation with respect to life, and this translated theologically into their Tanakh and their deity's plan for the inevitable end times. This is contrasted with the Aryan conception of a manly comportment toward the divine and a carving out through will and skill of his own proper destiny, a heroic striving for the transcendent and for conquest and power. The power sought by the Jews and Christians as well as females is that of an invisible nature, a subterranean or clandestine power grab. In their specious minds they are victims who just want to have peace, and anyone and anything which contravenes even only in potentia the particular agenda is violent as in a violation of their will to power, their survivalistic propensity, which is a costume in which their will to power takes form. They believe it but refuse and perhaps cannot know their true, inner motivation. They are blinded by a survivalistic instinct which necessitates not self-control oriented toward the divine and a stoical indifference to death as in the case of the Aryan, but a desire to control others and everything other to themselves. Their world fear, as Heidegger called it, is their motive principle as well as their desire, which operates in an uncontrolled manner and hence projects itself upon the world as the pestilence which has escaped from Pandora's box, unlike in the case of the Aryan, who sublimates desire and uses it as directed energy to achieve victory both on the earth in a harmonious state form as well as in the stars. The mutable nature of the Jewish type attracts those of a similar nature to itself, females and effeminate males, especially those of the Oriental and Far Eastern, specifically Chinese variety, form a combine on the basis of elective affinities, and this can be seen in tangible manifestation today with the respective geopolitical power blocks, the masculine pitted against the feminine, each group interpenetrating both anatomical sexes, effeminate males, Jews, and the sympathetic non-whites, along with most females on one side and on the other the more constant and spiritually oriented toward the transcendent or at the very least the titanic lower octave of masculine consciousness, some subgroups of Latin America and some distant affiliates amongst Negroes, Redskins and the more Caucasoidal Arabs. The distinction here is between the spiritually oriented, those who direct the focus of their will toward the divine and yet in a fixed and unwavering form, and those whose will is oriented toward the mutable and transient, both in terms of mental state, behavior and its expression yin in Chinese Taoist terms, as opposed to the yang, of what Evola called the solar Uranian spirituality of the Aryan and related types. The dark feminine of the yin principle manifests itself in various ideologies which are its expression and which, though apparently divergent and even conflictual, are mutually self-supportive and are particular programs which have the same goal as their pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, that being total power and the formation of a despotic government structure. These ideologies have not formed only in the recent centuries but have been a presence perhaps since the time of Lemuria. What is called liberalism today has often been, and indeed in many extremist circles of Christianism identified as Satanism, has pervaded the world and its history for millennia and has the common denominator of the Mother Goddess and the Dionysian rites related thereto bound up with it as an inextricable chemical bond. The mother goddess archetype is a presence in the more esoteric basis of liberalism, Gaia Sophia, the astral light, Isis, etc., liberalism being an exoteric and mundane crystallization of these ideas. The mother goddess and her consort are reflected politically in the figure of society or the community and the individual members thereof, the former being as a hive and its queen bee in relation to the soldiers and drones who serve her agenda and who are fused with her in the hive mind collective consciousness. However, it is not liberalism or even an occult or secret society form of the mother goddess which is the exclusive form of female power in modernity within the Piscean Age. The Christian religion, being a formulation of the Jewish consciousness of feminine pathos though incorporative of solar Aryan elements, is nonetheless also incorporative though to a lesser degree of the archetypes, one might more properly say of, the consciousness of the mother goddess. Hence there is Mary Magdalene and the apostolic Jewish figures who by virtue of their behavior, at once communistic and passive, embody the female consciousness only with elements of the macho man Randy Savage variety. The symbolism of Judeo-Christianity has connotations of the mother goddess, the cathedrals and churches typically, at least before they were further reduced in their quality to mere mass-produced structures amidst the reign of quantity, were of an ovular shape in their doorway tapering at the top, conveying a simulacrum of female power to those who entered, to them serving as a witness of the mother goddess, her Shekinah glory, that of the female Holy Ghost. The robes of the priests, be they Protestant or Catholic, were typically of a female nature, long and flowing, concealing their actual sex beneath and connoting the traditional dress of the Middle East and Mediterranean with its feminine consciousness. The black suits of Catholic priests with a white collar clearly revealed the yin-like darkness of the hidden or all-pervading nature of the astral light, of cosmic chaos, the mother goddess, the white part of the collar conveying perhaps the manifestation of the divine masculine father god organizing the chaos in its differentiation of forms, the white patch being placed over the throat chakra, the locus of the word or verbum, the logos. The effeminate manners and whispery nature of the priests also convey the mother goddess in her representatives. The ecclesia or church is a physical concretization of the vagina and the parishioners are the fetuses within, who are being gestated with the word or logos through which they become Christians, or devoted servants of the consort of the mother goddess, Christ. The spectacle of the mother goddess though veiled behind the apparent masculine father god is ever present and pervades Christianity and all this particular sects. The spectacle and pageantry of churchianity operates on the basis of simulacra, appearances and images of a wholly female nature that which is discreet, spoken of in whispery tones of the sacred and typically depicts the effeminate Jewish males who star as the anti-heroes of scripture and the ubiquitous motif of the Virgin Mary and the Christ child, the representation of the mother goddess and her consort. Such imagery and theater spectacle of the mother goddess conditions the sheep to adopt the mannerisms of a female, paradoxically even the most manly, of males, irrationally aggressive, emotional, mutable in their consciousness, a lunar Semitic mode of soulishness, and controlling. Indeed, the political manifestation of this consciousness is female and there is little difference between the female mode of liberalism and that of Christianism. Both are control freakish and despotic and embody themselves in a technology of power which is ubiquitous, pervasive and totalitarian. Both are intolerant of anything not pacifistic and oriented toward a quasi-sensualistic emotionalism, anything that places one in a pleasant state of being and which enables one to ignore the unpleasantness of challenges and existential threat which enhance and enable a transcendence of this base state of contemplative pacifism. The technologies of power deployed by the regime of the mother goddess are the illusory power of simulacra theater, appearances of threats to frighten people into submission, the panoptic vision of the police state and its spy network of citizen spies, community policing or citizens on patrol. This is not to say that there is no credibility to the threats, far from it. The female power structure by virtue of its essence is that of female violence. The voyeurism of gang stalking is the sexual component related to the sadistic thrill it gives its participants, which sadism is the death drive component of the instinctive-minded nature of female power oriented around the pleasure principle, the phallic totem having a skull impaled at its apex. Sex and death, Eros and Thanatos, unite in the libidinal nature of the instinctive mind of the ants in the anthill of the Tellurian community. All are part of the hive mind which, by virtue of its ubiquity, drags down all to the lowest level of beast consciousness, to the instinctive hive mind of what Evola called the animal ideal, the activation of the reptilian brain, of the instinctive mind with its self-fixation on the sex-death connection, one wholly female, wholly chaos, the principle of the mother goddess. Hence the delight in sadism is the activation of the primitive mind which perpetuates itself in the gang-stalking praxis with its harassment and passive aggression, shunning and abuse of members of the anthill who are disqualified by the queens as members become pariahs and the differentiated men who are incapable, by virtue of their essence, to participate in a hive mind rooted in primitive drives, sex, death and the belly and genitals which are the basis of its philosophy. The mother goddess in her lower aspect is reflected in modernity and across the spectrum of ideology she has gestated as her ideoplasmic progeny, liberalism, Christianism, libertarianism with its obsession with consumerism, the base tendency toward matter without form. The female power latent within these ideologies manifests itself to the behavior of their adherents and serves the solidification of the hive mind which entropically closes in on itself under this influence of a hive mind collective consciousness, of a lunatelluric form, directed toward the lower states and are rooted in the mire of the primitive, of an undifferentiated chaos of the multi-cult, wherein everyone is equal in relation to the cosmic womb of the mother goddess, absorbed into non-being as a satanic rite of the extinction of identity, of difference. Venom of the demiurge, a parasite growing into its host. We are all more than familiar with a certain humanoid tribe whose notoriously parasitic nature has spread itself over the earth and has come to monopolize nearly all positions of power and influence. The question must be asked, what is the cause of this parasitism and what can be done to stop its viral spread? This question will be investigated in light of the nature of the parasite and the otherworldly powers with whom it is bound. Miguel Serrano, referring to the Demiurge, spoke of the Jews, this parasitic tribe, as an ideoplasmation of his illusory dreaming. According to Serrano's conception, Jewry are some form of plasmation, projection or emanation of the Demiurge's essence and manifested on the earth as his de facto children, as literal offspring of their father god. Whether this means they were a result of genetic engineering and hybridization in a more concrete sense or were beings whose origin was not humanoid and who metamorphosed into a human through some other process is not entirely clear. Given that plasmation suggests or implies some form of mutation, the latter may be more likely the case. Pop culture, the Entartata Kultur controlled and operated by Jewry as a weapon in their occult war against the Goyim, is a vehicle through which the conveyance of their aggression against the Goyim is made. In their system of ethics, revealing what they're going to do, albeit secretly and through symbolic means unintelligible to the Goyim, before they do it exempts them from liability for what they do and justifies them in their actions. Hence, looking through a pop cultural lens at the parasitic tribe and their behavior enables one to gain insight into their nature or essence and plans and thus to circumvent or thwart them to a degree. Of course, exposing oneself to these vehicles of vice and instruments of idiocy not only subjects one to a dumbing down influence but renders one susceptible to the Jews' predictive programming, transmuting or rather mutating one's consciousness in the image of the Lord, as an ideoplasmation of the Demiurge's illusory dreaming. The illusion machine of pop culture, be it in the form of comic books, video games, magazines, movies or virtual reality of whatever kind, fascinates the mind and facilitates the agenda of the Jews and their God, bringing one's consciousness into alignment with their protocols and this in spite of any opposition one might have as motivation. Regardless, the following investigates the viral spread of the parasite tribe in its particular form of existence, not considered so much in abstracto, in a purely rationalistic sense, but in doubt of organic sentient life, as Lakheim. The lower forms of life in the plant and mineral kingdoms are considered conscious in occultism. They have life cycles and change under certain conditions and exist their essence according to their blueprint or nature. They grow, expand, atrophy, rust and die. The physical plane of being is a reflection of the higher planes which manifest through their subjection to the influence of the demiurge in ever-increasingly dense states of vibrational frequencies, what might be called the manifestation of differentiated order. The concrete material plane is in a condition of entropy, a gradual densification and crystallization which renders its denizens more detached from spirit. The smaller kingdoms of simpler conscious, sentient life are perhaps more greatly influenced than more complex organic systems of life such as the mammalian, and hence are more susceptible to influences from the higher planes, not being as strongly opposed to those influences given their relatively less powerful and complex form. Hence they may these lower substrata of sentient life that are known to us, be a more penetrable gateway for entities from higher dimensions to enter into this world and to exert their influence upon more complex organic life such as the human all too human. Jack Hart referenced Serratium marcescens, a unicellular algae which has conscious intelligence and has the capacity to take over other life forms and exert control and influence upon them. This defines it as a parasite, an organism which exists at the expense of others and which is dependent upon the other organisms maintaining at least a basic level of functionality in order for the parasite to perpetuate itself. This medium, one of the lowest if not the lowest form of physical life on the planet, would serve entities from higher planes as a perfect medium through which to work in such entities' viral spread over the Earth, in effect a medium of parasitical takeover. In the context of pop culture, there are many venues which reveal the presence of a greeny yellowish or simply greenish fluidic medium which has a hypertrophic function, forever growing, spreading and replicating itself, typically through being absorbed by mammalian life forms of a more complex nature. This medium, or rather the entity or entities which have taken possession of it, use it as a physical, organic instrument of its will. Hence the entities and their ideoplasm, or the lower strata of life through which they manifest and carry out their takeover, can merge symbiotically with their host, the consciousness of the host becoming merged and usurped by the parasite over time. In the movie by John Carpenter, The Prince of Darkness, the presence of a green fluid contained within a glass vessel for thousands of years since the time of Christ is presented as having a relationship to or containing directly the Prince of Darkness, i.e. Satan, the adversary of God. This fluid manages to get loose and become absorbed into the body of a Jewish female who is attracted to it by some strange influence of sympathetic resonance. This may be a hint as to the true origin of the allegory of the Garden of Eden and Lilith being conceived of as the offspring of Eve and the serpent, Eve representing humanity, the serpent Satan, and perhaps as a bioplasma substance through which the consciousness of the Prince of Darkness works, mutating and usurping the physical body of Eve. Perhaps this is the origin of Jewry, and they are an ideoplasmation of the Prince of Darkness's illusory dreaming, as Miguel Serrano alludes to. The Jewish female then serves as a vector for the spread of the substance, which in turn affects others in the same way, transforming them into robots of the demiurge in Serrano's terms. Other lower kingdoms of life such as the insectal are present, and to a greater degree than that of the more complex systems of the human or animal kingdom. The presence of greenish-yellow slime in Carpenter's earlier movie Season of the Witch further underscores that this was probably a revelation of the method. In this film, the typical Jewish tactic of inversion is put forth, with the arch-villain being an Irishman who is an occultist attempting to perform a ritual sacrifice of children on Halloween or Samhain. He utilizes robotic creatures who he makes in his toy manufacturing company, who when killed, secrete this greenish-yellow algae-like substance. These robots are also accompanied by insects who, as in the Prince of Darkness, are an ever-present phenomenon. In the Halloween film, these automata are activated by a mysterious force derived from pieces of Stonehenge which the pagan has taken from its resting place and relocated to his toy factory. He has attached silver shamrock brand icons to his manufactured Halloween masks, which have a small granule of the rock of Stonehenge and a microchip inside, and which, when activated by the commercial he runs viewed by the children wearing the mask, causes this energy to discharge as electrical fire of the witch power into them, killing them. Again, insects are ever present and come out of the dead once this gruesome process has been brought to its final stage of sacrifice. Perhaps the mycoplasma of the automata human cyborgs, the which power and insects function in some synergistic mode, being all related as in the Prince of Darkness as occult forces domineering over and organizing the lower kingdoms of life. The depiction of a parasite growing into its host or an outright murderous assault against the human all-to-human. The demiurge at work in his assault against the pure. In the Prince of Darkness, the woman who is selected as the female vessel who will bring into the world, into manifestation, the Prince of Darkness, happens to be a blonde woman. This cursing of the Gentiles on the part of the probable Jew John Carpenter, the director of the film, may nonetheless have at least some intelligibility in.